This is David Duke. I approach my commentary on the Edgar Killen case with more than a bit of trepidation. As a long-ago former Klansman, albeit a non-violent one in an absolutely non-violent Klan, any comments I make on the current murder case against Killen will be used by some in the media to bring up once more my early Klan involvement and somehow suggest that I condone violence or murder. It is vital to note that I have always forthrightly condemned violence, and that no one ever associated with me or my Klan organization has ever been accused of violence against any minorities. Let me repeat that. Not a single member of my organization was ever accused of any violence. The public still can't get the idea that there are many different Klans with completely separate leadership that profoundly differ. The fact that any group of misfits today can call themselves a Klan and say or do incredibly stupid things like the type seen on Jerry Springer was one of the reasons why I left and formed a new organization in the 1970s. The violence that occurred primarily in the 1960s was one of the catalysts to the damaging changes that came about to the European community. Every iota of violence on the part of whites was exploited by the press to justify the racial integration of the South. To that end, there is ample evidence that government informants and agents actually launched, aided, and abetted numerous acts of violence against minorities. This has been documented by the U.S. Congress in their investigation into COINTELPRO, our federal counterintelligence program, that targeted both left-wing and right-wing organizations. Because of 9/11, the level of government COINTELPRO type of activity is at a now incredibly high level. Aside from any moral opposition to gratuitous violence, involvement in such activity today is the quickest and surest way to destroy the movement for our heritage and freedom. In modern case after case, government agents and informants have been the initiator of violence. And this is why zero tolerance of violence is an important part of our now quite famous New Orleans Protocol. The violent events that happened in Philadelphia, Mississippi in 1964 are now more than 40 years old. They are not defensible. Yet one can understand why they occurred. When a social system in place for hundreds of years is overthrown by force, against the overwhelming sentiment of the people, violence is a certain outcome. The amazing thing is that such monumental social changes to the South came without a lot more violence. For far less dramatic social changes in many nations of the world have sparked mass violence that makes the limited violence of the South seem very minor indeed. In terms of moral relativism, the civil rights movement ultimately caused far more loss of life and limb than did the limited violence in opposition to it. In the South of Jim Crow, black children were relatively safe from violence. They went to their own schools, pretty much associated with their own kind, morning, noon, and night. There were no tough, racist white kids to bother them in integrated schools because there were no integrated schools. In stark contrast, since the forced integration and busing decreed in the 1960s and 70s, there have been millions of white children who have suffered as small minorities in overwhelmingly black schools. The black kids grow up with a chronic recital of slavery and a catechism of supposed white wrongs against blacks. And now we have one more, the Edgar Killen case. Such naturally inflames many to a deep-seated resentment against whites. That anger is combined with the fact that young blacks thrive in gangster rap culture and are far more likely to be criminally violent. One good measure of the racial violence is a study done of gang assaults. It shows that in attacks involving groups of more than two assailants, blacks were 200 times more likely to attack white victims than whites were liable to attack blacks. That's 200 times more likely. Egalitarians claim that all black violence and crime is due strictly to environment. But there is a growing scientific contingent that says that criminality is more a question of nature rather than nurture. But while the cause of black violence can be debated, the fact is, without debate, that blacks do have a much higher rate of criminal violence as compared to whites. So integration has led directly to a tremendous number of violent attacks on whites. It has been shown that many adult teachers live with fear of black violence in mostly black schools. What do you suppose the fear level is of the minority of white children who are usually confronted by blacks who are bigger and more aggressive? The higher black failure rate itself causes many blacks to be much older and more physically powerful than their younger white counterparts. Racial integration of neighborhoods, communities, and schools has made whites much more accessible to black violence and criminality, and has created literally millions of white victims of black violence and criminality. Compare the millions of white victims of black violence to only dozens of victims in the so-called civil rights movement. An example of the toll taken is one of the most heinous crimes, forcible rape. Coinciding with the civil rights movement and integration has been an epidemic increase of black rape against white women. Blacks rape white women at a rate of at least 25-1 as compared to white rape of black women. That's a horrendous 2,500% higher. 25% higher would be bad enough, but 2,500% higher is intolerable. And some studies point to a much higher ratio, approximately 150-1. 150 white victims of black rapists as compared to one black victim of white rapists. Segregation was portrayed to America as the indignity of blacks drinking at separate water fountains or attending separate schools. Well, how about the indignity of assault, robbery, rape, or murder? We have substituted one supposed moral transgression of separation for what I think is a far worse form of human oppression. The truth is that in recent times, whites have suffered from physical abuse far more than blacks ever did under segregation. In fact, millions of white families don't even dare to use the public schools. They are under the terrible burden of having to struggle and pay for public education with their high taxes, and then having to personally finance their child's education in private or church schools. I've often made the comparison of the Rosa Parks back of the bus issue. It is true that blacks once rode in the back of the bus, but at least Rosa could ride on the bus. Since the advent of the civil rights movement, in many parts of our major cities, whites don't even dare to get on public transport. So Rosa could always get on the bus. But hundreds of thousands of white Rosas of today can't even get on the bus for fear of the risk of life and limb. All of this is extremely politically incorrect for me to discuss, but I have nothing to lose. I can tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. In our press, It is almost as if these things against European Americans didn't exist. But millions of whites are painfully aware of the loss of our civil rights by the so-called civil rights movement as forced upon us by government and media. So I wanted you to understand why so much opposition existed in the 1960s and why millions of white people know today, as they did then, that the so-called black civil rights movement leads to massive denial of the civil rights of white people. Those violations go far beyond affirmative action. Affirmative action, as you must be aware by now, is nothing more than naked, rank, racial discrimination against white people who are better qualified than their black counterparts. The proponents of the civil rights movement reveal the hypocrisy in the utmost clarity. And this goes on constantly. I'm reminded of the famous civil rights attorney, Alan Dershowitz, who has come out now for torture of criminal suspects. And let's not forget that this super Jewish supremacist, Dershowitz, is all for the segregation and repression of Palestinians in the Jewish supremacist state of Israel, but is gallantly for integrating Mississippi. Two of the people who died in Philadelphia, Mississippi, were New York Jews who descended upon the South to give us the civil rights I explained above. Of course, at the same time they came South, the Jewish state of Israel had established the strictest, most apartheid state in the world. But those two Jews weren't over in Israel fighting for human rights and so-called civil rights. They were trying to force it down the throats of Southerners who knew better. Everyone condemns the murder of Schwerner and Goodman and Cheney, as they should. But the results of the revolution that they work for has since resulted in the deaths and injury of tens of thousands of white people across the South and across the nation. The so-called civil rights movement spawned a murderous wave of crimes against humanity and civil rights violations that still go on to this very day. The fact that Jewish supremacists like Schwerner and Goodman led the so-called civil rights movement from its beginning. Marxist Jews were the founders of the NAACP. They financed the whole civil rights movement from its inception. Jewish lawyers fought the federal cases that made integration the law of the land. Frantz Boas and other modern-day Jewish supremacists such as Gould, Kamen, Rose, and Diamond are the egalitarian high priests of today. And let's not forget that the overwhelmingly Jewish media has been the force that lied to America about the civil rights movement and still lies to us every day. It's the same media that tells us that prosecuting this 80-year-old man in Mississippi is a good thing. And it's the same media that bleeds out unquestioned support for the most racist state on earth, Israel. Now, with the thousands of unsolved crimes against whites all over America, what does the government spend years of work and millions of dollars on? Answer: with no new evidence, they decide to retry a decrepit old man who cannot even stand up straight for an offense that happened over 40 years ago. It is a political trial for political reasons, if ever there was one. You see, Americans are starting to see the real destruction of human and civil rights brought on by the so-called civil rights movement. But there are no outrages to focus on, as the media did in the 1960s, to justify the media's support of this program. So, they're dredging up an old wrong to wipe white noses in it and spread the guilt around thick and smelly. The trial of Edgar Killen is a clear violation of the Fifth and Sixth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. our nation's most important statement of civil rights, the Bill of Rights. In the Fifth Amendment, it says, quote, an American shall not be tried for the same offense twice. And in the Sixth, it says that, quote, an American has the right to a speedy trial. Speedy trial. Our forefathers put those civil rights into our Constitution for good reason. The idea of not being tried for the same offense twice was inserted because tyrannical governments often will keep trying people until they can obtain a conviction. This, of course, is exactly what has happened to Mr. Killen. He's being tried again for the same underlying offense because it is a politically correct case for today. And to think that he's being retried 40 years after the fact. The reason why our forefathers put speedy trial into the Bill of Rights is simply because justice delayed is justice denied. Most people can't remember things clearly that happened last month, much less what happened 40 years ago. Memories get mixed up with what people hear from others, what they read, and what they see in the intervening time. Furthermore, over such a lengthy time, what happens to evidence that can corroborate a man's innocence? It is likely lost. For instance, if a man has a solid alibi proving that he was somewhere else at the time of the offense, and the alibi is supported by three or four substantial people, there's a good chance now that they're dead. Or if not, their memories are faulty after so many years. This case is not as if new DNA evidence is turned up on a hitherto unsuspected murderer many years after the crime. Mr. Killen was tried before, and he has been known to the government for all these 40 years. Government authorities had the responsibility to try him in a timely manner, as provided by the Constitution of the United States. The fact that government agencies did not should not make this helpless old man suffer the consequences of a trial held 40 years too late in complete violation of true justice and human rights. This trial is one more piece of evidence that the Constitution and our Bill of Rights are just scraps of paper to those who dominate the legal and political process in America. It's one more piece of evidence that in America, real civil rights are dead. This has been David Duke for Our Heritage and Our Freedom.